time is coming on very quick for the Day of Atonement that's coming up. And that's a time when believers in the plan of God for the salvation of mankind will fast. They'll do without food and water. They will do it individually and as a group. And members of God's church will not drink beverages or eat food for a 24-hour period from sunset to sunset. And we get this from the scriptures in Leviticus 23, verses 26 through 32. So I want to go over this message today, entitled The Many Purposes of Fasting, because we focus on that as we prepare for that at this time of year, and we look to Leviticus 23, verses 26 through 32. And this gives us, we're taught, God tells us what we should be doing. Verse 26, "And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, also the 10th day of the 7th month shall be the Day of Atonement. It should be a holy convocation for you. You shall afflict your souls and offer an offering made by fire to the Lord, and you shall do no work on that selfsame day. For it is the Day of Atonement to make atonement before you for the Lord your God. For any person who is not afflicted in soul," meaning in body, "on that same day shall be cut off from his people. And anyone who does work on that same day, that person I will destroy from among his people. You shall do no manner of work. It shall be a statute forever through your generations. In all your dwellings, it shall be a Sabbath of solemn rest, and you shall afflict your souls." Again, it says afflict. "On the 9th day of the month, at evening, from even to even, you shall celebrate your Sabbath." A couple things I want to note. And it talks here about afflicting. Well, the Bible usage of affliction says to afflict, oppress, humble, be afflicted, bowed down, become low, downcast, to stoop, to humble yourself, to weaken oneself, to be humbled. Well, fasting is equated with afflicting oneself, and we read that in Isaiah 58. Now, the bigger story in Isaiah 58 and verse 3 was people were saying, "But hey, we fasted. Why didn't we get what we want?" There. Well, the fasting was equated to afflicting themselves. And here in Isaiah 58, verse 3, people were complaining. They said, "Why, we have fasted and you have not seen me." Or say, "Hey, God, you didn't notice? We were fasting. Why have we afflicted our souls and you took no notice?" Well, they were fasting with the wrong purpose or the wrong reason. So fasting, afflicting, of course, certainly doing without food and water, fasting certainly does afflict oneself. Try it sometime, from time to time. And then you'll notice that as we start out Leviticus 23 and verse 32, it has the word celebrate in there, and it closes off by saying, "You shall celebrate your Sabbath." Well, that's an interesting term. You're fasting, you're afflicting yourself, you're... Most people aren't real fond. They're going to be miserable and doing without. And then it says, and then celebrate the Sabbath. Well, isn't an interesting turn? Well, if we take a look at Strong's H7673, we look at this word celebrate means to desist or rest from your labors, to cease, to put an end to your labors. Another translation is to observe the Sabbath. And that means Sabbaths are a feast day or a joy. And so then I turned to an interesting source. I didn't even know they had this source, called feasting or fasting.com. Who would have thought? But it tells like pretty much everything you want to know about fasting. Well, maybe not everything, but quite a bit. And they put down various definitions of fasting. So if you're going to fast, they talk about a physiological fast. And quoting from this site, it says, "The body's growth pathways are inactivated due to a shortage of nutrients." Basically, the body starts shutting down. You don't have gas in the car. Your car is not going to go very far. So you have physiological fasting. And there's two ways that happens. One of them, they call it ketosis, a metabolic state in which your body then, instead of, because it doesn't have food coming in, uses the fat and the ketones rather than the blood sugar or glucose to maintain a fuel source. So you're going to burn what you already carried along. My airline pilot uncle, who used to weigh 50 pounds heavier, said, "Oh, I got plenty on my center tank." because he's used to flying with wings and that. He could fly for a while on his center tank. So, but what ketosis does, you burn that inside your system. The other thing they talk about on this physiological fasting is autophagy, the consumption of one's own tissue as a metabolic process occurs during starvation and during certain diseases. Ooh, you see concentration camp people? That's autophagy, where the body consumes itself. Now, I know the story of my brother tells the story of someone he knew who had gotten cancer. And so his solution was to do this. All he did was drink water and electrolytes, certain vitamins and minerals, and practically nothing else. And he said he was skin wrapped on bones at the end of 1 year. But the body consumed all of its fat, consuming the muscles and the tissues, consuming him down. But he said in 1 year later, it had also consumed and stopped the cancer for a young man, turned things around. I thought, well, that's a plan B. It's a pretty ugly way to go, but that's a possibility. So there's that type of physiological fasting. The second kind, they say, is water fasting, in line with the dictionary definition. No food, just water. That's it. No caloric intake. Now, I wouldn't have known about that there was such a thing as water fasting, although I had my annual physical exam here recently. And to do that, you got to have a blood test first. So I go in for my blood test, and they're poking me full of holes and can't find any way to get the blood out. And they said, well, what's wrong here? And I said, well, I fasted just like you told me. I said, I did without food and water. And I'm thinking, just like we do on Day of Atonement. And he said, what we mean by fasting is drink all the water you can so you're hydrated. Just don't eat any food, nothing with caloric intake. Oh, well, no wonder everything is shrunk and you can't get any blood. I mean, he said, come back in a couple of days. Well, I super hydrated for the next 2 days, healed up all the needle marks on me and came back. And now it's easy to get the blood. So that's why I didn't know there was a water fasting thing, but now I know. I'll be more careful next year. The third category of fasting is called intermittent fasting. Now, there's two kinds of this. Intermittent fasting is you refrain from food at regular times, whether it's on certain days of the week. And one of those is like alternate day fasting. And I'd like just to turn to Luke 18 in verses 11 through 13. And there's a description of this in the Bible, in Luke 18, in verses 11 through 13. And this is where a Pharisee was pronouncing how good he was. Well, look, here's what I do. Verse 11, Luke 18, verse 11. The Pharisee stood and prayed thus with himself. God, I thank you that I am not like other men, extortioners, unjust adulterers, or even this tax collector. Now, verse 12, I fast twice a week. I give tithes of all I possess. He's listing out all the good things he does and saying twice a week. Well, that's a form of intermittent fasting called alternate day fasting. Well, he's picked out a couple days doing it every week. It's probably a good idea physiologically, but what was he using it? As a club, my righteousness is better than their righteousness for doing so. There's another kind of intermittent fasting, time-restricted eating, and I do practice that, where I eat 8 hours a day and I don't eat 16 hours a day. And so I can take advantage of some of the effects of fasting. So I look forward to going to bed hungry, because then all night I'm not going to know about it. I'm sleeping. Okay, wake up, I'm going to eat breakfast anyway. So that worked out, has worked out well for me. I started that 35 pounds ago. So this time-restricted eating, that's worked. So that's the third kind, is intermittent fasting. And then the fourth kind, and I've never heard of this before. It's called fasting with food. And I'm going, huh, what? Fasting mimicking diet. Well, this is where certain days of the week you have a very low caloric intake, such as 600 calories on certain days of the week, very minimal, probably so you can't hear your stomach growling so loud. So the four types of physiological fasting. Now, the word fast itself is from a Germanic word that means to have firm control over yourself. So it's the discipline of being the root of all good things, is the original German expression. I guess you're going to have a lot of discipline to make it, to have firm control over yourself. I remember as a young man, my first Day of Atonement, and Victor Kibik was the local minister. And he was explaining, and he was young once too. And he was explaining about an older lady. It was her first fast, and this had been a year or two before that, on Day of Atonement. She wasn't sure she could make it. So she brought a sandwich and an apple and put it in her purse. And all through the Day of Atonement, she had that sitting with her, the sandwich and an apple right there, just to be sure. He said, he figured that was the worst kind of torture, knowing it was right there all the time. And I thought about that from time to time. If I'm going to, you know, this, if I'm going to fast, I do not want Twinkies or anything else that's going to be enticing really close that I can pop in. But I think the Germanic explanation is discipline being the root of all good things. While we go through this subject, I want to just keep this in the back of our mind. When we fast, does fasting give us license to make decisions that we wouldn't otherwise should have made? So I want to go through the purposes for fasting and the relevant scriptures. Now, bear in mind, some of these are individual fasts. People will fast individually. Some people will fast as part of a group, for a group fast. And we've seen that with ourselves over the years. We'll individually fast. Others will say, the church will say, let's have a fast on a certain day because we're facing a particular issue. One type of fasting is, and I should ask you to buckle your seatbelt. I've only got 22 points today, but I'll try to be brief on them. And I haven't started them yet. So the first reason for a purpose for fasting is mourning. We've had, on this congregation, we've had 3 deaths in less than 2 months, in 6 weeks. There's a type of mourning that comes about. And in 1 Chronicles 10, verse 11, this is not unusual. 1 Chronicles 10, verse 11. And this is on the death of King Saul. They arose, all the valiant men, and took away the body of Saul and the bodies of his sons, this was in warfare, and brought them to Jabesh and buried their bones under the oak in Jabesh and fasted 7 days. Now, what kind of fast? It isn't very clear, but they fasted 7 days. This was a period of mourning, and not unusual, as we will come to see in other examples. So it's done during a period of mourning where they're afflicting themselves because they're sorrowful for the occurrence. So one purpose is mourning. Number one is mourning. Number two, and this was a weird one, and that is a ruse. And we have this in 1 Kings 21, verse 12. A ruse or a trick. And this is where Ahab, King Ahab's wife in the northern kingdom of Israel, his wife was Queen Jezebel. And she set up a trick, a ruse to honor Naboth. Now, Ahab was looking out of his palace window and saw the vineyard of Naboth. In 1 Kings 21, said, you know, I'd really like that vineyard. And she said, well, just go take it. He said, I'm the king. I just can't do that. She says, oh, and so she just arranged it. So what did she do? She arranged Naboth to have this great honor bestowed upon him and proclaim a banquet. But not only that, in 1 Kings 21, verse 12, they proclaimed a fast. Now, that's got to be really special. A fast followed by a feast, which is a good idea, right? After you've been going without. And so, and what happened is that's when the evil witnesses came in, the liars came in, made false accusations against Naboth, and took him out. He was killed and his property forfeited to the king. Well, in 1 Kings 21 and verse 27, we read, when it came to pass that Ahab, King Ahab, heard the words that Naboth was dead, he rent his clothes, put on his sackcloth, wore him, in other words, humble garments, and fasted, and lay in sackcloth and went away softly. So here was another case of mourning here, but it was because of the ruse of Jezebel in killing an innocent man, because they lusted after his property. So number two is a ruse. People can be fast for a ruse, and they may not even realize it, okay? And others may realize it. Number three is to beseech God for a change. Don't like the way things are? ask God to change it. That's a reasonable thing, right? Since God is the ultimate authority. In 2 Samuel 12 and verse 16, prior to this, we have a story about the first child of David and Bathsheba. Now, the child was conceived while Bathsheba was still married to Uriah, and Uriah died. And she sent word and told the king she was pregnant, and he brought her into the palace, and the child got very sick, was deathly ill. And then we read in 2 Samuel 12 and 16, David therefore besought God for the child, and David fasted and went in and lay all night upon the earth. He didn't do it for his own comfort. He was thinking of the child who was deathly ill. However, one must know that for royalty throughout the ages, through thousands of years, I kept records. Who's been with the king? And so that somebody couldn't claim to be the king's child. And so they would know who's legitimate, who's illegitimate. Well, the records didn't turn out very well. She's came in to be the king's wife after the death of Uriah, but the baby was born way too soon for that to occur. And so it would have created confusion. Who is a legitimate child of David? Or was it, in fact, Uriah's child? The gestation period for humans is 266 days, 8 days short of 9 months is the average human gestation. Well, they can do math. They had third grade math. They could do that back then. So the child was deathly ill and in fact died. If we read on in 2 Samuel 13 and verse 21, then his servants, David's servants, said to him, David, what thing is this that you have done, that you fast and weep for the child while it was alive, but when the child was dead, you did rise up and eat bread? In other words, the child died, David got up, cleaned himself up, and then went and dined. They said, we don't understand it. This is where the mourning period is coming, and you stopped your fast. And of course, and we read in the next verse in 2 Samuel 12:22, and David said, while the child was yet alive, I fasted and wept, for I said, who can tell whether God will be gracious that the child may live? Verse 23, but now he's dead, wherefore should I fast? Can I bring him back again? I shall go to him, but he shall not return to me. So David understood that it was a one-way trip, and that someday he would see that child in a resurrection. He would go to that child, but the child wouldn't be coming back into this life. So you can beseech God for a change. Now, whether it happens or not, there are other circumstances. But we can all beseech God for a change. Number four, fasting for national salvation. For us, fasting for our country. That's pretty big stuff. Ancient Persia is modern-day Iran. The capital was Susa, also called Shushan. It's 300 plus miles east of modern-day Baghdad, Iraq. And we read in Esther in chapter 3, starting in verse 8, in Esther 3 and verse 8, we read about this King Ahasuerus, also called King Xerxes. And of course, the book of Esther, obviously, it's a Jewish girl named Hadassah. Her Persian name was Esther. And we have this evil man who is an advisor to the king. His name was Haman. Esther chapter 3, verse 8. Haman said to King Ahasuerus, there's a certain people scattered and dispersed among the people in all the provinces of your kingdom. Their laws are different from all other peoples. They do not keep the king's laws. Well, you see, they were Jewish. They kept the Jewish expectations and standards. Therefore, it is not fitting for the king to let them remain. If it pleases the king, let a decree be written that they be destroyed, and I will pay 10,000 talents of silver into the hands of those to do the work to bring it into the king's treasuries. So you might almost think it's bribing the king, where they can pay the money. If the king would certainly take care of this, that Haman would reimburse the king for this expense. So what happens is, And letters were sent, verse 13. Letters were sent by couriers into all the king's provinces to destroy, kill, and annihilate all Jews, both young and old, little children and women, in one day. It's pretty striking. It wasn't just a military campaign. It was genocide. On the 13th day of the 12th month, which is the 12th month of Adar, and to plunder their possessions. Hey, it's a win for everybody, right? Kill all the Jews, take all their stuff. And so you have now in Esther 4 and verse 3, and in every province, wherever the king's command and his decree was, there was great mourning among the Jews, and fasting, and weeping, and wailing, and many lay in sackcloth and ashes. There was a fasting for national salvation. They knew that if something didn't happen, they would all be wiped out. There's another example of fasting for national salvation, and this is not of the Jews. In fact, they were Gentiles. In Jonah chapter 3 and verse 4, starting in verse 4, if we look at the story of Jonah, of course, we all know about Jonah being swallowed by the big fish and then being burped out 3 days and three nights later, all being bleached white from stomach acids from this great fish, commonly called a whale, but I don't know what it was, and burped out. Now, being swallowed, I would think, would be bad. Not sleeping for 3 days and three nights would be bad. Being bleached by stomach acids is a bad thing. So the word is that in the stories of the historians of the time said that the man was bleached super white. Well, I suppose stomach acid would pretty well take care of any pigment on your skin. So he's burped out on a beach, and he began, and then and now he decides to obey God and go preach and prophesy to the city of Nineveh. And it's a long way around the city of Nineveh, and as we read the story of Jonah, and so it took a while, days, to walk around it. So what did he do? In Jonah 3, starting in verse 4, and Jonah began to enter the city on his first day's walk. It took a few days. He cried out and said, yet 40 days, and Nineveh shall be overthrown. Verse 5. Well, the people of Nineveh believed God. And what did they do? They proclaimed a fast. These weren't normal followers of God. What's up with this? Well, they were doing this for national salvation. They proclaimed a fast, put on sackcloth from the greatest to the least. That means everybody. For verse 6, the word came to the king of Nineveh, and he rose from his throne, laid aside his robe, covered himself with sackcloth, sat in ashes, and he caused it to be proclaimed and published throughout Nineveh through the decree of the king and his nobles, saying, this is interesting, let neither man nor beast, herd nor flock, taste anything. Let them not eat nor drink water, but let the man and beast be covered with sackcloth, cry mightily to God. Yes, let everyone turn from his evil way, from the violence that is in his hands. Who can tell if God will turn and relent and turn away from his fierce anger so that we may not be perished? Wouldn't it be wonderful if we had from the lowest to highest today in our land say the same thing? Let us all turn from his evil way and from violence in his hands, and maybe God will relent and turn away from his anger that we may not perish. Well, verse 10, then God saw their works, and they turned from their evil way. It was repentance, which is really, really quite remarkable for a Gentile people. And God relented from the disaster he said he would bring upon them, and he didn't do it. So you have this couple of examples of fasting for national salvation. And in both cases of those cases, God honored that. We also have fasting for a number, that was number 4, fasting for national salvation. Number 5, fasting for personal salvation. In Esther 4, in verse 16, we'll look up this personal salvation, fasting for personal salvation. In Esther 4, 16, now Esther was the queen, and she said, go gather all the Jews that are present in Shushan, in the capital, and fast for me. Because she was going to go into the king and ask for him to withdraw his condemnation of the Jews. So she says, fast for me, neither eat nor drink 3 days, night or day. Anybody here ever fast for 3 days? Going to be kind of hungry, going to be kind of thirsty. You can make it about 3 days before you die without water or get vastly, vastly sick. That's pretty serious. But she was willing to do it. And what does she say? I also and my maidens will fast likewise. So I will go into the king, which is not according to the law. You see, if anybody goes into the king unbidden, it's the death penalty. That way you don't have people rushing up and I want this and I want that. No, you go up to the king and if he didn't call you or hand his scepter out to those who were coming, that was the death penalty. They hauled you off and then did away. So she says, I will go into the king, which is not according to the law. And if I perish, I perish. So let's first fast, and now I will beseech the king on behalf of the Jews. So number five, fasting for personal salvation. So then we have number six, fasting for the wrong reasons. We have examples of that in the Bible. And this is where God compares man's fasting to God's fast in Isaiah 58, verse 3. And we've quoted this one earlier. In this story, why have we fasted, they say, and you have not seen? In other words, they're calling out God and saying, hey, we fasted, and you didn't do anything about it. Why have we afflicted our souls and you take no notice? Next verse. What does the Isaiah the prophet respond with God's comments? Behold, you fast for strife and debate, and to smite with the fist of wickedness. You shall not fast as you do this day to make your voice heard on high. Is it such a fast that I have chosen? In other words, for the wrong reasons. A day for man to afflict his soul, to bow down his head as a bulrush and spread sackcloth and ashes under him. Will you call this a fast, an acceptable day of the Lord? He's saying, yeah, you can do all of that stuff, but it's not according to my purpose. It's not a fast that I've called. It's one that you've done and for evil purposes. Chapter 58, verse 6. Is this not the fast I've chosen, to loose the bonds of wickedness, to undo the heavy burdens and let the oppressed go free, that you break every yoke? So, got to be careful. We should follow God's fast and not one that we make up. So, number six is fasting for the wrong reasons. Then, number seven I have, God will not respond favorably to wrong fasting. So, I think of this. And I put down in my notes, God will allow us enough rope to hang ourselves. How often does that happen? Yeah, go ahead. See what happens. I don't know why I heard that as a young man, that when my dad said, yeah, well, sometimes people will, they say, how can they get away with that? Well, they'll get theirs. God just letting them have enough rope, they can hang themselves. In Jeremiah 14 and verse 12, in Jeremiah 14, 12, Jeremiah is reporting God's thoughts. When they fast, I will not hear their cry. And when they offer burnt offering and an oblation, I will not accept them. But I will consume them by the sword and by the famine and by the pestilence. Ouch. They did it for the wrong reason, wrong purpose. God not only didn't respond in the way they wanted, but he allowed them enough rope to hang themselves, as it were. I will consume them by the sword, by famine, and by pestilence. In other words, let the results come from their own behavior. Let that consequence come upon. Then we look at God calling upon leaders to proclaim a fast. We're in Jeremiah. Let's go to Jeremiah 36 and verse 6. God calls upon leaders to proclaim a fast. In Jeremiah 36, 6, therefore go you and read in the roll which you have written from my mouth, the words of the Lord in the ears of the people in the Lord's house upon fasting day, and you shall also read them in the ears of all Judah that come out of their cities. Verse 9, and it came to pass in the fifth year of Jehoiakim, son of Josiah, king of Judah, in the ninth month, they proclaimed a fast before the Lord to all the people in Jerusalem and all the people that came from the cities of Jerusalem, of Judah to Jerusalem. So the king called a fast. God said, you're a leader. You need to do this. You need to call a fast. and the people will respond to leadership accordingly. So God will call upon leaders to proclaim a fast. Can you imagine that happening today? Leaders from whatever country, whether it's ours or another country, call upon a fast for people to change their ways. So number eight, God calls upon leaders to proclaim a fast. Then number nine, I have even non-believers fasted. We all know the story in the book of Daniel, in Daniel chapter 6 and verse 18. But the story of Daniel is that they said whoever doesn't worship the king would be thrown into the lion's den. And sure enough, Daniel was thrown into the lion's den. These were hungry lions. Normally, the flesh or the animals that were thrown in, the lions would be jumping up to grab them before they ever hit the ground. And so the lions would jump. These big cats would jump and leap. They were kept deliberately hungry. And so when Daniel was cast into the lion's den, what did the king do, King Darius? Daniel 6, verse 18. Then the king, Darius, went into his palace and passed the night fasting. Why? Well, Daniel was a beloved counselor of his. He was deeply saddened, but he couldn't reverse his decree. And so he was saddened by the turn of events. He fasted. Was he a godly believer? No. But if we read, he passed the night fasting, neither were instruments of music brought before him, and his sleep went from him. Well, as his habit, if he couldn't sleep, brought in the musicians, play soft music, off to slumber. Didn't happen that night. He was beside himself, and if we read on, he hurried down the next morning to see what had happened, and there indeed Daniel had been saved. So even the non-believers had fasted. But of course, we're in Daniel, and look at Daniel 9 and verse 3. We have Daniel fasted to honor God. Wasn't always about, I want this, or I want that, or save me from this, or save them from that. He was simply fasting to get his mind and heart right to honor God. In Daniel 9, verse 3, and I set my face unto the Lord God, to seek by prayer and supplications with fasting and sackcloth and ashes. He was doing what he could to honor God, and that was helping him to focus, getting away from earthly things and focusing on honoring God. Number 11, God calls for fasting and solemn assemblies in the end time. God calls for fasting and solemn assemblies in the end time. We read this in the prophet Joel in chapter 1 and verse 14. In Joel chapter 1 and verse 14. Sanctify you a fast. Call a solemn assembly. We have a solemn assembly today. Gather the elders and the inhabitants of the land into the house of the Lord, your God, and cry to the Lord. Joel 2:12, we'll keep reading. Therefore, also now, says the Lord, turn you even to me with your heart, with fasting, with weeping and mourning. And Joel 2:15, blow the trumpet in Zion, sanctify a fast, call a solemn assembly. Joel was a prophet. What's going on here in the very end times, the latter times? And he said, there's a reason to be calling for a fast and solemn assemblies. It didn't say, eat all you want and stay home. No, it's quite the opposite. So then we look to, I have down number 12. We already talked about an entire city of Gentiles fasting from destruction. We already read in Jonah about Jonah. I guess I got it duplicated here. In Jonah 3:5, the people of Nineveh believed God and proclaimed a fast and put on sackcloth and ashes from greatest to the least. But so that's a duplicate of an earlier one. Then we go to number 13. Regular fasting leads to joy, gladness, and cheerful feasts. How can that be? Regular fasting leads to joy, gladness, and cheerful feasts. In Zechariah 8, in verse 19. Now, this is interesting because it doesn't talk about just one annual fast. it talks about a number of fasts during the year. In Zechariah 8, verse 19, thus says the Lord of hosts, the fast of the fourth month, the fifth, and the fast of the seventh, and the fast of the tenth, shall be to the house of Judah joy and gladness and cheerful feasts. Therefore, love the truth and peace. So, first comes the fast, then comes the feast. And that's what we're looking at here as we approach the Day of Atonement, just a few days prior to the Feast of Tabernacles. First comes the fast, followed by the feast. So regular fasting can lead to joy, gladness, and cheerful feasts. The next one we have is fasting to serve God. Fasting to serve God. If we look at Luke 2 and verse 37. In Luke 2, verse 37, the verse is about a widow of 84 years. That's 84-year-old widow. I don't think anybody here has hit 84 right now. What does it say? She was a widow of 84 years, which departed not from the temple, but served God with fastings and prayers night and day. That's what she could do. That helped her focus. Her prayers helped her to be able to serve God night and day. Now, that doesn't mean she never ever ate. It just means that she fasted regularly. Next one is fasting. Some do and some don't. And you'll find this was an interesting development in Luke 5 and verse 33. And the Pharisees were in Luke 5:33. They said to Jesus, they said to him, why do the disciples of John fast often and make prayers, and the disciples of the Pharisees, but you eat and drink? You're not following their program. Whoa, well, that's a good question. You see, you have to fast at the right time for the right purpose. So they were challenging then Jesus. The disciples of John, meaning the baptizer, fasted often. And the disciples of the Pharisees, remember that one we read where they fast 2 days in a week? And they were real proud how righteous they were because, wow, they did that. And so Jesus Christ didn't follow their arbitrary rules, the commandments of men as doctrine. And so we must also be careful there and not doing it for arbitrary or commandments of men purposes. The next one I have is fasting at the end time. Again, in Luke 5 and verse 35, we're just a couple verses away, and Jesus is explaining in Luke 5:35 about fasting at the end time. But the days will come when the bridegroom shall be taken away from them, and they shall fast in those days. So at such a time then, and of course, Jesus was speaking of his own crucifixion, and demise, that there will be fasting. I presume it's like fasting like in mourning. But that will be because, you see, everybody looks at the end time as some far-off distant time. But in reality, the end time is however much time we have before our own demise. Mrs. Engelbart didn't have any notice. Boom, that was over with. Mr. Barron had short notice. Before. Mr. White had 1 second notice. That was before his accident. And so for the end time, for each one of us, can be very different. We can have lead time, like Mr. Barron, no time, like Mrs. Engelbart, no time, like Mr. White. So fasting at the end time means not just the end of the age, and it means also the end of the age. But for us, the end of the age could be at almost any time. The next note I have is fasting is a habit or declaration of righteousness. We clued in a little bit earlier on this one of Luke 18, verse 12. And this is where the fellow said, the Pharisee, I fast twice in the week and give tithes of all I possess. They made it a habit. It's not a bad habit to have, to fast. It's not a bad thing to tithe. But you can't wear it as a badge of righteousness and proclaim it to everyone else. Oh, yoo-hoo, look at me, look how humble I am. I think you're missing the point of the whole idea of fasting. So fasting is a habit or declaration of righteousness. Habit, probably a good thing. Declaration of righteousness, you're missing the point. Next point I have is we have a believing Gentile fasted in Luke 10 and verse 30. Now, Jesus Christ said he was sent to the children of Israel. And yet there were those who were not of the children of Israel who became Christians. In Luke 10, verse 30, we have this one called Cornelius. And Cornelius said, 4 days ago I was fasting until this hour, and at the ninth hour I prayed in my house, and behold, a man stood before me in bright clothing. He was seeing a vision. And you have here, you have a Gentile who is fasting and becomes a Christian. He becomes enlightened through with the truth. So it isn't limited to those who are simply sitting among us today. It's among those who are responding to God's calling. Now, there's another incident or a style of fasting in the Bible, and that is fasting before assigning a job to someone. We read in Acts 13, verse 2, and that would be a fasting before assigning a job to someone. And this is in our church tradition. And following this verse, again in Acts 13, verse 2, as they ministered to the Lord and fasted, the Holy Spirit said, separate me, Barnabas and Saul, for the work whereunto I have called them. Separating out people for a special function. And for those people to do that, they fasted first and received the message from the Spirit of God to separate out Paul and Barnabas and Saul, which was became Paul. In Acts 13, in verse 3, what happens? When they had fasted and prayed, they laid hands on them and they sent them away. In other words, off on their particular apostolic mission. So, here is a pattern here that is followed often in the church today. Before an ordination, you will often find those that are ordaining will fast first to make sure that and ask for God's blessing upon that setting apart for people for the service of God. We're in Acts 14 and verse 23. We're in Acts. Let's go to chapter 14 and verse 23. And what did the apostles do in Acts 14, 23? And when they had ordained them elders in every church, meaning local congregations, and had prayed with fasting, they commended them to the Lord on whom they believed. They were setting up these congregations where they went, and ordaining elders in local churches. But they prayed with fasting. They wanted to be humbled in their own mind and make sure that the person that was being ordained similarly was humbled for the service of God, not for, I'm fasting twice in a week and I do all the good things. No, to get their heart and their mind right, so preparing them for service in God's work. The next point I have is that there is a certain time of the year for the fast. That time of year is coming up. We have it, this year is 2022, so it's on October 5th. We start the evening before at sunset, and we do without food or drink or water. In Acts 27, verse 9, here we have the story of Paul, the apostle. In Acts 27, 9, now when much time was spent, when sailing was now dangerous, because the fast was now already past, Paul admonished them. Notice it says the fast. They're referring to a specific time, referring to something that was set apart, a special day. And of course, that time is fast coming upon us of the Day of Atonement. They called the fast. Everybody knew what that one was. It wasn't like the one where you're doing every Tuesday or every Tuesday and Thursday or whatever it happens to be, or the second, fifth, ninth and tenth months, or whatever it happens to be for that routine. It was the fast. You might say a capital T on that. That's my own, if you were to, in the Tim's translation, so that everybody would know. So there is a certain time of year dedicated for the fast that God calls for. The next note I have is that not all fasts are the same. We have an example of a two-week fast. You thought your stomach growled before? Not all fasts are the same. And I had mentioned, well, we're going to go to Acts 27 and down to verse 33. And when I did my blood test for my annual wellness check, I found out not all fasts are the same. I thought you had to do without water and food. They said, oh, no. You could have had coffee or tea, non-caloric beverages, and had all you wanted of that. Oh, I wish you'd have told me earlier. Now I'm all poked full of holes and bandages. So I found out not all fasts were the same. I never thought about it before. Before, I've always had plenty of blood to offer, but apparently I shrunk a bit this year. So in Acts 27, verse 33, while the day was coming on, Paul besought them all to take meat, saying, this day is the 14th day you've tarried and continued fasting, having taken nothing. So the exact kind and style of their fast, I'm not entirely sure, but apparently there was 14 days of fasting. Now, whether they were all fasting on the full period or different people were during that period, but we can say that not all fasts are the same. Now, they will be on the Day of Atonement. We don't even bring beverages in on the Day of Atonement. Now, normally we have a bottle of water up here for the speaker, and I remember it was, 10, 11 years ago, we had Mr. Welch over as our speaker on Day of Atonement, and as usual, we had the bottle of water here, but because it was a Day of Atonement, we just put the empty bottle here. And I remember he sees this, what is this? You know, it's an empty bottle. We weren't going to, tempt him with a full bottle, but we did put the empty bottle there. But we didn't tell him ahead of time. Might remind him of that someday if he doesn't remind me first. Not all fasts are the same. The next point I have, only two to go here. Marital intimacy except during a fast in 1 Corinthians 7, verse 5. In 1 Corinthians 7, verse 5, defraud you not one another, except it be with consent for a time, that you may give yourself to fasting and prayer, and come together again, that Satan may not tempt you for your incontinency. So there is a time when normally husbands and wives can be intimate, except during a fast that God has called, or by your own understanding of a fast, that you're going to stay apart from marital intimacy during that time. So there is an exception under 1 Corinthians 7, 5. And then the last note I have is fasting as a ministerial expectation and apostolic travels. There are some ministers do a lot of travel. I know Dan Deininger in Montana is the only elder and the pastor in Montana, covering 100,000 square miles. He's got four congregations, and we've been there. We see how many miles it's been. And so he has a lot of miles to travel. He can't get to two of them on any one day. So they do a lot where they connect electronically to the ones that he cannot be at and makes the rounds. And so, because you're in your congregations are 4 hours apart, that's really hard. Really a challenge, and in summer and winter, whether there's prairie fires or not, whatever it happens to be, and we were there this last summer, and everything has to work right. The car has to work right. Traffic has to work right. On the way here today, there was a traffic accident, and we were sitting on the road. Eventually we'll get there. Just drum your fingers. It'll be fine. I'm just happy we weren't in it. Terrible smash up. Some rear end accident, front end of one vehicle's all smashed in, the back end of another vehicle all flung off and destroying somebody's fence. As we know, time and chance can happen to any of us. And so in 2 Corinthians 6:5, Paul writes about the challenges he had in his traveling. In 2 Corinthians 6:5, in stripes. Ooh, how many of us have had beatings in stripes with whips? Sure kind of hope to avoid that. In imprisonments. Now, we've had ministers around the world have been thrown in jail for preaching on the Sabbath, or any time for that matter, wherever it's been. In tumults, meaning riots, in labors, in watchings, and in fastings. big challenges on the road for those who are preaching the gospel of the kingdom of God. In 2 Corinthians 11, verse 27, Paul again is explaining the challenges he's had while he is making the rounds. And he covered great territory, bigger than Montana. In weariness, 2 Corinthians 11:27, in weariness and painfulness, meaning really, really tired, didn't matter if you're aches and pains, in watchings often, in hunger and thirst, in fastings often, in cold and nakedness, all the sufferings that he's gone on, but doing so as part of his apostolic and ministerial service. So, purposes for fasting, we've looked at today, mourning over a loss, a ruse. Sometimes fasts are called for the wrong reasons in a ruse, perhaps beseeching God for a change, maybe fasting for salvation, fasting for the wrong reasons, man's fasting instead of a fast that God would approve, and then that God doesn't favorably respond to wrong fasting. God can call leaders to proclaim a fast. Even non-believers fasted, as we looked at King Darius and others. We know that Daniel the prophet fasted to honor God. We know that God calls for fasting in solemn assemblies in the end times. We know that an entire city of Gentiles fasted for salvation from destruction, Nineveh, and they were saved. They were turned. They repented. We know that regular fasting can lead to joy and gladness and cheerful feasts, and we'll get to experience that here in a few weeks. Fasting can be done to serve God. We know that fasting, some do and do more often, and some don't. Jesus Christ was one that didn't follow their prescriptions of what they thought that they should do. And they'll be fasting then at the end time. There are some who fast as a matter of habit, and then they use that as a declaration of righteousness. How proud I am of myself, and missing the point of fasting to become humble. We have the example of even a believing Gentile fasted. We have God calling a fast before the ministers assigned a job to someone, before somebody was ordained or anointed to a particular job. We know there's a certain time of the year for a fast. We know that because we read about the New Testament Christians were keeping the Day of Atonement as well, as Paul wrote. And we know that not all fasts are the same. It can be a fast for a short time or for a long time. We know that marital intimacy, except during a fast, can be called for. And fasting is a ministerial expectation in apostolic travels. So in just a few weeks, we'll keep the Day of Atonement. And believers in the plan of God for the salvation of mankind, they will fast. We'll fast individually. We'll fast as a group. We aren't going to bring beverages in here. We're not going to drink them or eat food for a 24-hour period from sunset to sunset. And we know that from Leviticus 23 that we read earlier, verses 26 through 28. And we do it not just because we want to avoid destruction. We want to do it because we want to serve God and do what he says, because I really like the idea about joy and gladness and cheerfulness and feasting. I really like that part. And we notice in Leviticus 23, a statute forever, a Sabbath of solemn rest. You shall afflict your souls on the ninth day of the month at evening, from even to even, and you shall celebrate your Sabbath. So it's a celebration that we have that coming up. So let's prepare for it. Now that means, I did talk to someone recently in baptism counseling and said, it's really, really hard to fast. I don't know. That's going to be hard for me. I said, well, then maybe we need to practice. Maybe practice part of a day, and then pretty soon you'll work your way up to a full day and realize that you will actually survive and not be like the little old lady from 50 years ago, as I remember, who put a sandwich in the purse and polished the apple and hoping that they could make it through. No, you really can make it through, okay? God has given us the capacity to do that, and we can find reasons not to. But there are many purposes for fasting. Let's pick out and celebrate the purposes that God has set aside for us for fasting.